For those of us who have grown up, have been raised here, or perhaps have lived here for a long time, it's hard to imagine what it would be like if our city, our homes, our country was brought into devastation. We hear more and more about other places in the world, and we have more people who are now Canadians because of that. But we who have lived here probably don't really have any comprehension of what that is like. And today, in the Old Testament reading, we hear about Jeremiah. Jeremiah, who's been set into the king's imprisonment, so to speak. He's being held because King Zedekiah of Judah is ruling, and yet the king of Babylon is besieging Jerusalem. All that Jeremiah loves is being laid to waste, and we know that they will go into exile in Babylon. It's not a happy time. And furthermore, he's being questioned, why do you keep telling us about things that are happening? Why do you proclaim this message of God? And Jeremiah does a funny thing. He says, well, I've been listening. What a concept. I've been listening. I don't know about you, but when your life is being laid to destruction in whatever that way it may be, whether it's the pain of a relationship, or you've lost your job, or you have some physical illness, or you're worried about many things, when you are laid waste in that way, is that the time when you listen? I do eventually, but it takes a while, because first I am going to fix it. Aren't you? We all try to do it on our own. But Jeremiah responds by saying, I've been listening to God. And God told me that my cousin is going to offer me a piece of land. And yes, my country is being laid to waste. Yes, there may be no future, but I am going to buy that piece of land. And that is what I have done. Now, what's interesting about God's message is that not only does he listen to it and he acts on it, but God adds the second part. Make sure you keep that deed. Keep it secure. Keep it in clay pots, which was the best way to preserve things in those days, and bury it so that we know that you did it, so that generations to come can understand what you have done. If that were me, I would have laughed and said, don't be ridiculous. Why would I do that? As if anyone will care in generations to come. But think about our excitement when we find archaeological findings, when we find things that were dug and put away, and they come out, and we're thrilled to understand something from our history. So Jeremiah does all of that, because God says, one day, in the midst of all this devastation, in the midst of all your pain and your sorrow, one day houses and fields and vineyards will again be brought into this very land that you love. Jeremiah knew that that may not be in his lifetime. Just as for us, when something devastates and upsets us, we don't know if it's ever going to actually happen again. Whether we will ever again be able to laugh or jump or move or embrace or be joy-filled, that's not where we're at when we are devastated. But perhaps we may be listening, because sometimes that's what it takes to make us listen. This whole idea of having hope, placing our hope in something that may or may not happen, is what our faith is all about. None of us have been able to put our hands into Jesus' wounds after he was risen from the dead. That happened long ago and far away, and we are here today because there has been a hope passed on to us. And if you don't believe it, somebody in this church sitting beside you probably does. Because we wouldn't be here if it weren't for all of the faith of all of the years that has carried us to this place. And the church stands in a place now where sometimes it looks like there's no hope. Yes, today looks good. We've got a full choir. We've got lots of people in the pews. And we've had a budget meeting, and our deficit isn't as bad as we thought. So that's great. But there's so much more to just having a balanced budget and the pews filled. It's about the hope that we hold in this place, like in clay jars, for all the peoples whose lives are devastated, who are hurting, who need us to hold that hope. Last Sunday, I had I don't even know how to describe the experience I had. I went back to my hometown of Shawville for a dedication of what they have done to the church in Shawville. It was in disarray. The outside was falling off. Chunks were falling off. We understand these things. The tower had never had a spire on it in my lifetime, but originally had when it was built. And there were some repairs to be made. Now, I don't know if you know about Shawville, but it's in Western Quebec, and when I grew up, nobody spoke French, and we were the only, still is the only town of that size in Quebec not to have a Roman Catholic church. It says something about the town of Shawville. However, it was a very English community, and there were rich farmlands, and still are, around there, and there were many families who had farms, and it was very prosperous. One of the reasons I don't often go back is because it's hard to go back. Not because I don't have as many family there anymore, but because it's not so prosperous. It is not the place of my childhood. And it's not because the culture has changed in the sense of language or who lives there. It's just because the world has changed and small family farms are gone. And people move to the cities to look for work. And so in the midst of all of this, and in an Anglican church, which is becoming rarer as we speak, there is still a church there. And there are people there who worship week by week. And you would think, and I've heard, I know their priests well, that what if there is no church here in the future? What do we do? How many do we have to close? That's something we face throughout our diocese. But in Shawville, they saw it slightly different, and I'm not saying it was easy. They decided that their building, as much as it's a burden, as much as it's a bastion of what used to be in some ways, they wanted to invest in the future. And so they fixed it up. They got grants from the government. The Quebec government's good about heritage things. They put a spire. For the first time, imagine in this day and age, there's a spire with a beautiful cross on the top of it, and the outside is perfect, and there was a great celebration last week. Not only that, they bought a piece of land. The house next door was torn down, and they bought the land and made it into a park for the community. That's investment in something. Most of the world would say that is stupid, because you're investing in a piece of property and of church that we may not have any people for. But I will tell you that the people who were there last week could feel the hope just by the action of doing that. The hope of saying, even if there are no people here, there will be a spire and a cross and a clock that rings on the hour, the bell that rings, to tell us about the faith here where we are. Lazarus didn't have any reason to hope. He hoped maybe for a breadcrumb or two, and perhaps the licking of the dogs of his wound was the most hopeful thing that happened for Lazarus. And yet, in the end, Lazarus experiences the fullness of life, and the rich man, who had everything and didn't know he needed hope, lost it all. And not only that, he had no way of gaining hope for some help in his situation after he died. He begs Abraham to send someone to his brothers because, like the church in Shawville, he wants to have a symbol. He wants someone to tell the future generations that there's hope. Just make sure, A, you know you need to have it, and B, invest in it. And Abraham says no. They've been told over and over and are being told over and over again. And if they aren't going to listen to the prophets, then I'm not sending anyone else. And so here we are. We're not in Hades, that I know of. We're not in Shawville. We're not in the land of Judah or Jerusalem, but we are here in our lives. We stand here in our lives, both personally and corporately, and we have a very big opportunity to choose hope and to invest in that and invest in the love that God has shown us in so very many ways, or to not. It's really up to us. It's up to us, because if we grasp hope, like we had done when we built the entrance and the gardens, every day I see people who have very little hope in this city resting on our steps, enjoying the gardens, saying thank you to Alice when she's down on her knees, making sure the gardens are perfect. Our space here, not just in the space, but in the people and what we do here, is a sign of hope. And so it's up to us to remember that every time we interact with anyone, we have the opportunity in our lives, in our words, in our space, and in our actions to offer the hand of hope, the hope of hope, to those who don't have it. So may we invest wisely. Amen.